Welcome back, friends. We're taking a rather careful look of Psalm 105. So we note the thanks, give thanks at the beginning. Then there is a call a voice. So it's deeds, not just philosophical musings. Wonderful works and actions, remembrance. All right. Remembrance in Hebrew thought is an ancient idiom for being faithful to one's covenant. And God remembered Noah. So some might say, well, so he's not much of a God, he kind of forgets. Well, we're not much of a reader if we don't kind of take some basic stock of what it is, you know, the words are meaning.
Right.
So, then there's obligations and covenants amongst other things in the ancient world established family ties, interpersonal relationships, miracles and judgments, wisdom, Abrahamic covenant, mindful forever. And so what was the telos? What is the final end of all that? The promised land of Canaan. The wanderings of Abraham, the Holy Family, a Holy Family, few in number, but rich in faith, which the Lord guarded during their sojourns. That's what Psalms mentioned, that they were guarded, even though they're few in number, and they went around. And even when we remember the sorrowful part where Abraham tells Sarah, just say I'm your sister and not your wife, because she's beautiful, and he knew the kings would lust after her. And so to save his own skin, perhaps, he says that to Sarah. And even with that, the Lord has his hand on the kings and protects them. So, yes, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, those are the patriarchs. Remember, I talked about that there is a, so we had the early Bible, the early, well, where's my little, here's another little, it fits in the screen better. So the early world, so now we're in the patriarchs. Yes, in the covenant with Abraham. And yes, so Abraham's given three promises, nation, name, universal blessings. That's Genesis 12, 1 through 3. That will later be raised to a covenant. So land and nation, Genesis 15, and Mosaic covenant. So the royal dynasty of Genesis 17 was the Davidic covenant, worldwide blessing, Genesis 22, that's the new covenant. So that's the three promises which are elevated. Land and nation will be with Moses, royal dynasty, a kingdom will come from David, and the new covenant will become from Christ. So Joseph, the patriarch Joseph, he's a type of Jesus. He's the favored son of Jacob, and he was sent ahead to protect his people during a period of famine. And God's people prospered, even though they were in the land of Ham. So if we had our ears attuned, when we hear the word Ham, or when we see a posture of moving away from Jerusalem, you know, we kind of go, shh, start sissing. Shh, you know, that something bad's about to happen, or something,
right.
Ooh, you know, the creaking in the basement, you know, the thriller. Ooh, we're in the land of Ham. What's going to go on? Okay, so who is Ham? So in Genesis 9, we recall the sin of Ham, which uncovered his father's nakedness, was Noah. So we have Noah, his father's naked, and Ham uncovered his nakedness. Again, that is an idiom phrase like we had up here of remembrance of Zakar, and that is Ham committed incest with Noah's wife, who was his mother. And his issue were the Canaanites. And the Canaanites were known for their sexual perversion, just like the father of that group of people were in Ham. And it's and we see it's also the first commandment God gives in Leviticus 18:7, and of course a fuller read of that would be Leviticus 18:1-7. However, it was more than incest, so it's more than sexual lust that Ham has in mind here. It's a power play. He's wanting the power. He wanting the position of Noah. So we recall Absalom sleeping with David's concubines. Remember, David leaves the kingdom. He takes some his wives and some concubines, but he leaves the rest. Absalom takes over Jerusalem, and Absalom commits to have sex in front of all the people with the concubines. That's a power play. He says, "I'm the king. I'm the power play." And of course, that is 2 Samuel 16:21-22. So, verse 20. Oh, let me stop there. Do we have thoughts before we start? We look at a verse.
I just love the correlation between the imagery of Joseph being a Christ figure and Egypt representing this idea of sin and are being rescued from that. And just the way that even this historical account of the nation of Israel, there is sort of a foretelling of the kingdom of heaven and are being saved from sin through Christ coming down. And like Joseph as a slave, it's like Christ surrendered himself to the slavery of humanity and sin in order to conquer it and be lifted up. And I just think it's so beautiful how interconnected it all is, because I think we so often forget just how rich the whole story is, you know. And it's not like the Bible isn't just the New Testament, but there's this whole Older Testament proclaiming the same truth through this particular nation.
Let's continue on. Let's see how it goes. So verse 25, he turned their hearts to hate his people, to deal craftily with his servants. So that's another knock, if you will. The Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, right? Mm-hmm. And the question is, does the Lord directly cause evil? Is he an active cause of evil? Because if we just take that verse right out there, it says he turned their hearts. So it looks like just a very superficial reading of the text. Or we're talking about the Exodus accounts with all the signs and wonders. Does the Lord do that? And the answer is, of course, no. It is a passive type of action. The people whom we're all given free will. And those who are in the grip of evil are repulsed and hardened by those who are for the Lord, are with the Lord. Ted and I were just reading Wisdom. I want to say Wisdom 3. It could have been 2, but I think it's Wisdom chapter 3 this morning, where, you know, the Lord in his goodness comes around those who are in sin, and not in sin so much like the adulterous woman, but sin like the Pharisees and scribes. Mm-hmm. And Wisdom says, well, you know, they're around him. He just makes us feel really evil. And let's try and do these things and see if God will come to his rescue. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. It's the goodness of God, which for some softens their hearts and comes to him and asks for repentance. But for others, it does harden their heart and they become more convicted in their sin. So did Jesus cause that? Well, in a sense, yes, because it's or did God cause the hardening of the people here towards Israel? In a sense, yes, because he acted in a particular way. And that was a cause, but it wasn't an active cause. It was the people from their own free will choosing what
actions. Their own reaction to the goodness of God.
That's right. That's right. And sometimes, my friends, I think, at least I know, I have, that always catches me by surprise, because the goodness of God, and it just, you know, I love hearing praise reports of how God has worked in people's lives. I love them big. I love them small. I love conversion stories. I just love hearing people. And it's always a shock to me when I'm around those that don't want to have a thing to do with it.
Yeah. And there's been so much hurt for so many people because of the misrepresentation or like the false proclamation of God's goodness, I feel, you know, or some people have just distorted the image of God in making it something where it is focused on condemnation rather than freedom through conviction and repentance, you know, rather than you're a sinner and you need, you know, like just endless condemnation. Because I think that does harden some folks' hearts, because all they feel is attack from the church, you know, or the children of God. And it just is a total misrepresentation in a lot of ways.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We're going to pick up on this heavy and hardened heart in the next episode, my friends. Till then, fides, eratio.